Hello, everyone, and welcome back to ProWrestlingPonderings.com. I am the senior editor, of course, Jerome Cusan. I've done many podcasts for this website concerning a wide range of topics almost for 5 years now. While some would argue that's 5 years too long, we're going to be doing something a little different here tonight and about once a month. Ring of Honor and Chikara both have their own podcasts. You may have listened to it, the Podcast of Honor. Chris, Ari, myself, and Matt Waters and Chris have done over the years. And Viva Chikara, that's Kevin Ford and Justin Houston's baby. But I really feel like now is a good time to sort of expand the things a little bit here and to talk about AEW. They are going to be, they have just recently started a brand new weekly show on the Roku channel, Manny GTV, and they've gotten a lot of buzz lately because of this and some of the great things that they have done. And what we're going to be doing about once a month or so is my two co-hosts and myself are going to come together to talk about what's going on in the world of AEW. If this is the first time you're listening to a Pro Wrestling Ponderings podcast, you can find all of our past podcasts on the iTunes and Stitcher radio feeds. We always appreciate feedback. Mailbag at ProWrestlingPonderings.com. You can also leave a nice 4 or 5 star review on the iTunes and get the algorithms going. Let people discover this show and so many others here at Pro Wrestling Ponderings. And if you go to the website, PWPonderings.com, if you click on the high spots and the Amazon links, you'll be helping to support what we do here. So if you want to buy the latest PWG DVD that just came out, DDT4, go to the High Spots link and support what we're doing. Keep the doors open. We've gotten a lot of new content recently. I've sort of been on a mission to bring in some new writers and some new voices here to Pro Wrestling Ponderings. And two of them are sitting with me here tonight, and they will be my co-hosts for this podcast. I'll talk more about what the name of the podcast may or may not be at the end of the show, but for right now, let's get into our conversation about AEW. First, he actually lives in Berwyn, Illinois.
Unfortunately.
he does unfortunately live in Berwyn, Illinois, but it's nice to finally have someone local at Pro Wrestling Ponderings. You know, I have to talk to all these people in Virginia and California and Georgia. Derek is probably 20 minutes away from me driving. So Derek Walker, he will be doing live reports of AEW shows, wrestling blogs, and long Twitter rants about how much he hates PWG. So if you really want to go heckle him, go to DWalker87. And you can do that right now as you're listening to the show. You can multitask on the internet. That is a possibility. Derek, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm good, but I want to say that I don't explicitly hate TNA, or I hate TNA, yes. PWG is great for what it's worth, but lately it seems to have become finisher spam sort of promotion, and I'm more of a psychology fan, so I'm happy to be on this podcast, and we will be discussing the most recent show from AEW, Path of Redemption, but first we have to introduce Alex, I guess.
So. Alexandria Torres will be doing the DVD reviews as well as the weekly AEW review, that the weekly AEW show that is going up on Matty GTV. Alex is from New York. Alex, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. I'm not the one who confused PWG with TNA, so do not send me angry tweets.
That's a low blow, and that's a DQ.
I'm happy to be here.
Just like in AEW, Derek, there are no disqualifications or countouts.
Well, if he discreets, I guess, then, you know, whatever. His discretion.
If he discreets.
Whatever he wants. Throw a match out.
All right, so let's get into our conversation. I think a good place to start is to sort of discuss how we became fans of AEW. Obviously, you know, I think in Derek and I's case, you know, we sort of get to get that live experience on a monthly basis, whether it's in Berwyn or Bourbon Street or Dirty Nelly's or any of the other places. Alex, I want to start with you because you live in New York, and obviously you don't get to come to Chicago and come to Berwyn every month. How many AEW shows have you been to? Only the one back in November, correct?
Only the one.
So how did you become a fan of this company?
Okay, and when I first started getting into independent wrestling, I really liked Tyler Black. I still do, but I somehow only became a fan of his once he was leaving. So everything I wanted to see had to be old stuff, and I ended up buying a bunch of AEW best ofs, and then it snowballed from there.
Derek, how did you become a fan of the company?
Like you said, it's a local flavor sort of thing. I explained a little bit in my first column, Squared Circular Logic, just to throw a plug out there. I explained that I found a flyer at the local hot dog stand called Lucky Dog, which is right around the block from me. And they had a flyer. It didn't look too nice. It didn't look too fancy, but it explained exactly what they did and where they were and how much it cost. So I checked out the Chaos Theory 2011, and, you know, from there I was in love.
So was it love at first sight, Derek?
Honestly, it kind of was. You know, I was expecting something a little less structured. I was expecting that basketball gym kind of layout, you know, casual fans. But AEW had a very compact sort of aesthetic to it. Not to mention they had diehard fans that were actually really into the product, people who showed up every month wearing the same clothing. Like, they became the locals, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. So as we move on here, obviously the big story with AEW from this past week is the debut of their new show on Roku. And what we're going to do is we're going to sort of offer our thoughts. Alex posted her full review on pwponderings.com. I have a review of my own up at pwupdate.net. So you could go both read what we had to say about the show in detail. Derek, since you did not write about the show, I'm going to let you start first. Overall impressions, you know, I really don't want to get into specifics, but just sort of overall impressions of the show, what was good, what was bad.
Overall impressions, the skeleton is there. They just need to flesh it out and put some meat on the bones, and they need to really make it a nice-looking corpse, so to speak, you know what I mean? Because right now, that skeleton is laying in the closet where it shouldn't belong, but once they start, you know, adding a few more matches to the show, like, I think this episode had 3 matches, a combined ring time of like 25 minutes, 30 minutes out of a 60-minute show. Once they do that, then it's going to flow a lot better. Once they fix their commercials and a few of their spelling errors. I mean, I'm just a grammar hound, so that's me. But, you know, the pieces and the components that need to be there are there. So going forward, once they make a few tweaks here and there, they'll have a good show.
Alex, what did you think?
It was all right. It was one of those things where, like, I can't imagine saying go out of your way to see the first episode, but there is some stuff that is worth seeing there. Like, if you don't own One Twisted Christmas, why not see Elgin versus Walker? But I don't know. I feel like putting it with the YouTube channel, you're mostly going to get people who are already fans. So there's nothing really there for them to see. And the show has to be for new fans, and I think there's still some problems there, too.
How so?
Correct me if I'm wrong. When ROH first did the HD TV show, they did this thing where, like, they had, like, the wrestlers do, like, a promo about who they were before the matches, like, as a way to introduce them. Like, that might have been cool. And I know they have limited resources, but it just feels like, like he said, bare-boned.
I think that from what everything that I've been told, that is something that they understand that they need to work on. And I completely agree with both of you as far as there are some good pieces in place, but there certainly needs to be a lot more promo time, I think, given to the wrestlers. I'm not even necessarily sure if they need more, quote-unquote, wrestling per se, but I think what they need to do, I mean, obviously, I think we can all agree that the video package and with all the commercials for the DVDs and the pro wrestling tees, I think we can all agree that that got pretty repetitive and annoying, and that's one of the reasons the show did not flow as well as it should have.
Was that exclusive to the YouTube version? Because I wasn't able to actually see the
YouTube version,
and I heard there were some different commercials on that version.
Hearing they replaced the commercials from the Maddie GTV thing, which might have been a blessing.
Right, because I heard there was like a Real Dial commercial, and I really wanted to see that. So
yes, from what I understand, I watched the YouTube version as well, because it's a lot easier for me to have my computer screen in front of me, have writing my Microsoft Word open on the left and watching the show on the right. So I'm probably not going to end up watching it very much on Matty GTV, despite the fact that I have a Roku player. But I flipped around a little bit, and they did show commercials for other shows and some sponsors for Matty GTV. And let me tell you, those commercials were interesting.
Well, give me an example. Throw one out there.
They aired commercials for some of their shows, and sort of their MO is that they're a little bit off kilter as far as the production because they're not corporate owned. So because they're not corporate owned, they're going to sort of go the other way, almost the complete other way. I think the most infamous show that people know about is the young lady who I guess has a friend who's a doll. But, you know, given that it is not corporate owned and if they just want to download the channel and they want to watch AEW, I think it's serviceable.
Perhaps I'm too highfalutin in my opinions. It seems like a channel that would really suit the Berwyn fans. I don't know why. Just growing up in Berwyn, it's sort of like a lower to middle class town. And we don't really appreciate those sorts of corporations, at least from what I understand. So that is a bit seedy. That's a bit kind of almost ECW non-corporate-ish. I think that might actually appeal to people. Don't get me wrong.
I agree. And I think that that is going to be, that's sort of a big part as to why this work. And this deal came together very quickly. Within 48 hours, you know, AEW got this deal together. So, and the thing is that it's really not costing them extra money at this point, except for obviously the extra production that is being put in by AEW executive producer Mike Pekovich. But I think the one positive thing that, you know, we can look at with this situation is, you know, they're not under the gun to draw high ratings. And I think that's very important. You know, they're really not putting in extra costs for extra shows to do like TV tapings. And I think that helps. And I don't think they're going to really have to change the way the shows are done in a major way. I don't think there are going to be drastic changes to the product, which I think is also a good thing. Because I look at what happened with Ring of Honor once those TV tapings started, and it feels like the product changed pretty dramatically in a lot of ways for the worse. You know, I think while this, I understand the value of having the show, especially with Roku and all that stuff, I don't think you don't want to necessarily change the product either. Alex, any thoughts on that?
I know the TV format, like, it changes everything up because you have to start to have a reason for people to come in each time, but at the same time, it has to build to why you should buy the iPay-per-views. Which in AEW's case, they didn't have. It would be why you should buy the DVDs. So what happens there is you're having a lot more matches. You're no longer trying to make them all the best they can be because it has to build to that. And it's just an entirely different format. They had some good matches on the show, but...
Okay, I've actually tweeted at AEW, being the scholarly young journalist I am here. And they have informed me that the show format is not going to change. They're not going to try to film, quote-unquote, TV episodes or TV matches that are like 5 to 10 minutes long. Like a blow-off feud between Silas Young and Eddie Kingston, per se, is not going to be like a 10-minute TV match. It's going to still be a long 30-minute match, and that probably just wouldn't make you know, the TV show because that would be the DVD selling point. So I think all our concerns are in the right place, but at the same time, I do sort of want to trust AAW in this respect and see where they're going with it. See where it goes.
So I do have a lot more trust with it. I have a lot more trust with that, especially since they're still trying to be like a lower, like they still want that feel of the AAW shows, whereas Ring of Honor, it changed the philosophy entirely to have a TV show.
Exactly.
So the philosophy of Ring of Honor very much now is that they are a TV-centric product. And that shows if you sit down and watch Ring of Honor on a weekly basis, you're going to see a lot of the same matches that you would see on the pay-per-views. I mean, they have given away every single AJ Styles match for free up to this point, and it looks like that's what they're going to be doing in the future. And, you know, they aired Glory by Honor in its entirety over 3 weeks of television. The most recent anniversary show is getting 2 whole weeks to itself. The final battle main event was seen on television, basically unedited. So Ring of Honor really is a television company. AEW is going to remain sort of reliant on selling the DVDs, the MP4s, and the streams at smartmarkvideo.com. And what that means is that the TV show is not going to have Men of the Year versus Zero Gravity for the AEW tag team titles. It's probably going to include a lot of the mid-card matches and some of the lower-card stuff that they're doing. So, I think this is a very tough show to balance because obviously I think you still want good wrestling, but you don't want to give everything away because you still need to sell those DVDs.
Absolutely. And I think striking that balance is going to be important for AEW going forward, just because, like, if you take a look at the first episode, which was main evented by Colt Cabana and Tweak Phoenix, but you had an opening match between Elgin and Walker. Elgin and Cabana both have that national appeal, the Ring of Honor backing, well, at least Elgin does currently. So I think that was really good of them to, like, I don't want to say pop ratings, but like put some names on there that would really help sell the show for first episode wise.
Alex, what did you think of Cabana being involved in the main event of the first show?
I think it's a great idea. I just think that that match might not have been the one to do it with. It was just, especially considering like the Elgin match was a stronger match, and at least the Cage match went a long way in establishing who Matt Cage is. Even I would even call it the weakest match of the three, and it almost ends it on a low note, if you know what I mean.
I think for people like us who are sort of ingrained in the world of independent wrestling, I think that's definitely the case, because I think, you know, we sort of know Colt Cabana's shtick by now. I mean, we could probably close our eyes right now and go through a Colt Cabana match in our head. We can open our eyes, and that is literally what is happening in the ring, the exact match that we pictured. But for, you know, maybe for casual wrestling fans or more casual indie fans who don't get to see Colt Cabana on a daily basis, but they listen to his podcast or they've heard him CM Punk mention him incessantly on Raw, you know, maybe I could see where there is that appeal to having a Colt Cabana match. And like you mentioned earlier, Derek, I think it's really important because of that working class, middle class thing with Berwyn. I think a Colt Cabana match is going to translate a little bit better to television than something as work rate heavy as, you know, a Zero Gravity versus Kung Fu Manchu match or something like a Kyle O'Reilly versus a Lewis Linden.
Exactly. You get the viewers' feet wet, so to speak, by throwing a name out there that's familiar to them, that they understand and that they, you know, they respect. And then you work your way up from there. Personally, what I would have done is given away for free, yes, for free, Steen versus Hollister, because those are big names and you're popping your champion on your first episode. I think both of those are important elements. At the same time, I can understand why you don't want to give that match away for free.
I mean, you want to sell that DVD too. Let's not.
Yeah.
But for like a first time effort, just saying like, hey, this is our first episode. This is what we really want to do. We're focusing on this. We want people to watch this. You need to give them something like an incentive to watch, because me as a fan who's already seen these matches, I have no reason to watch your show. So give me something that's exclusive. Give me something that's like even Derek St. Holmes and Phil Colvin doing like the intros, talking about Colt Cabana. Like I'm on the phone with Colt Cabana. That was really funny. And it really gave some character and some personality to AAW itself beyond just, you know, that trailer video they show that's 3 minutes long.
So what did you guys think of Shane Hollister not being on the show? I feel like this was the biggest mistake of the entire show, was not having Shane Hollister. I understand you're not necessarily going to have him wrestling a match per se or even showing one of his title defenses, but, you know, not having a promo on the show, I think, was a mistake, given that he is supposed to be the face of the company. Alex, I'll go to you on this one first.
I think this is where my point about original content comes in, because you can't put in a Hollister promo about a match that you're not going to show. It seems out of place. And with Scarlett's promo, that was just about Scarlett. So I can kind of understand where it can go in. Like, I think they needed to do a promo just where, like, Hollister was introducing himself and saying, oh, I'm the king of the mountain or whatever. Like, that's just it. He needed to be there because it's a good idea to establish who your guys are.
And I agree with that. I agree that the Scarlett promo seemed just weird and kind of tacked on, because, like, over the last year that Shane and Scarlett have been rolling together, Scarlett has just absorbed all of Shane's heat. Every single fan in that building, male and even female, has eyeballs on Scarlett. Shane Hollister is supposed to be this king heel, and, you know, you're giving the promo time on your debut TV show to his valet, who calls herself his manager. I mean, maybe she books his matches, I don't know, but that seemed out of place to me.
I want to see Scarlett signing contracts and making business deals. That's what I want to see. Glasses. I wonder if she promises hoopla when Hollister shows up.
Can't have hoopla at Bourbon Street anymore.
Nope.
Her in a suit jacket coming up with a grandfather Marcus Crane into one of the shows.
He's got a cob pipe and Scarlett's got her, secretary's outfit on. So that works. Let's do that.
This smells like ratings, guys. Mad HGTV needs the ratings. So
dude, they're about to hit a 1.0, so let's be honest.
Listen, Scarlett in a secretary outfit, if that doesn't do anything for the ratings, there's nothing you can do.
I would tilt her kilt. No, I can't go there.
Oof.
Woo. It's too late.
I'll save those comments for the Shimmer shows coming up, where I'll bring a bundle of roses for all the wrestlers and follow them into the bathroom.
We're not going to do that. Let's never go to a Shimmer after party again, Derek. Let's make that pact together.
Jesus. I feel so bad for those ladies, but God bless their souls. Anyway.
All right. So any final thoughts on the show? I think that Shane Hollister being on the first show probably should have been done. I think that was an easy fix. I think in future episodes, now that AEW sort of knows that they have a TV show, I think they could sort of plan events better to accommodate that. And I think including exclusive promos for the TV, I think is the most important thing. And
yes.
Interviews and whatnot. I think that's where you're going to really sell fans on those DVDs. And I can think of an example of back at Chaos Theory, Jimmy Jacobs doing a promo before the Shane Hollister match. I think that's the sort of promo that if you put that on TV, I think you might sell a couple of DVDs just with that promo because of how good Jimmy Jacobs is in it. Regardless of what you think of the match itself, I think that that's the sort of promo that if you put that on the TV and you tell people to buy the DVD, that's sort of a logical connection people can make.
If you want people to watch your show, let's be honest, most of the people buying Roku boxes exclusively to watch Matty GTV, exclusively to watch AAW on Matty GTV, are already AAW fans. So give them, during the shows, film a 10-minute exclusive match for the TV show. Make it an exhibition between two mid-card guys. Just give them some incentive. Give me some incentive to watch the show because currently there is none.
I mean, I think that this show is specifically designed for new fans at this point. And like I said earlier, I think this is just, it's going to be a growing pains process for the company to sort of balance this show to get new fans, but to also keep the current fan base engaged in it. Because I think you obviously want the current fans to still watch the show.
Exactly. But being the selfish man I am, I want to watch this TV show. Having an AEW show around every week is really badass. But all, at the same time, it's like I sort of need to convince myself to watch it, watch these matches I've already seen. So that's my take.
I think they should probably feel a little less stuck to the current shows. I think there should be some current, so people who are coming in know who's still there. But putting in a throwback match from a show that people aren't buying anymore or something like that is a good way to just have something that the current fans might not have watched or might have not seen in a long time. And the old fan
from the vault,
Yeah. Exactly. The first and third can be current ones. And then the middle one is just from the vault.
Going old school AEW.
Right.
That'd be really cool, I think. I mean, and look at the stars you have in the past. You've had Silas Young versus Bryan Danielson from 2009. You've had Seth Rollins, doing his thing. You had Claudio Castagnoli / Cesaro. He was in there for a couple matches. You had Austin Aries do a couple matches. The Machine Guns did a couple matches. I'm not sure, if you can air those on TV, if there's any legalese behind that. But they have, so many great matches from their history, from their 10-year history, that they can easily just pick one a week. Great idea.
Or at least clip the matches down even and sort of show maybe, 10 minutes of the Danielson Silas Young match and, point out where they can buy that DVD. I think that could still be a valuable thing to do as opposed to airing mid-card matches every week. Because I think that's going to be sort of challenging as a viewer, and I think it's going to be challenging for the company to sort of pump out these matches and this weekly show when they're only basically running once every 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's a bit Gabe Sapolsky-esque to say, hey, you like Seth Rollins now. Here he is when he was Tyler Black. But at the same time, you know, business is business, and that's really going to help. So I do like Alex's idea, and damn, such a backlog of stuff to choose from.
You don't even have to, like, you could clip a match. You could choose a mid-card match from then. Like, it'd be a good way to show the growth of either Shane Hollister or Silas Young or anyone else who's been with the show for a long time.
Why don't they do something like inside AAW where they, like, before a show, they'll just have, like, a camera crew run through the Eagles Club, like, this is our history. Like, I like those expository segments where they tell us more about the venue, about the people, about the places, the things, etc.
They could go to the hidden women's restroom.
Exactly. Is that on the third floor?
Second floor.
Exactly.
It was too far.
All right, so Derek, I'm going to give you some time to shine because I was not able to attend the most recent AEW show, but you were. You were able to attend Path of Redemption, and for a full recap of this show, you can go to pwponderings.com. Derek did a fine write-up on it, and you can also go find full results at pwponderings.com. If you click on Indie News, you can find results for AEW plus every other major independent wrestling company across the landscape, Ring of Honor, CZW, PWG, all of the great companies. So you can go do that. But Derek, any overall thoughts on Path of Redemption on paper? This did not seem like as strong of a card as the last 3 months, I would say. But there were definitely some interesting matchups on paper as well.
Well, Jerry, you didn't have the name value of 2 straight months of Kevin Steen, and those were back-to-back sellout shows, I believe. And you didn't have Ricochet and UHA Nation coming in. But at the same time, you got to realize AEW more or less is gearing up for its back-to-back shows on the 21st and the 29th. So this was always going to be a B show, so to speak. And the main event between Hollister and Cabana sort of solidified that. And what I mean by that is overall the crowd wasn't where they should have been. They were sleeping for much of the night. And given that it was a Friday show, I understand that, but it's never nice to hear pockets of dead air, just 5-minute windows of people sitting on their hands where you're trying to get a chant going and it just fails the first time out of your mouth. And it really makes it an uncomfortable work environment for the wrestlers because you could, like, when they can hear themselves talk and they know that the other people in the audience can hear them talk, shit hits the fan. So overall, it was a bit of an awkward showing, I think, just because you didn't really have the sort of energy that you had the last 3 months from that audience. And you did have some matches in there that were good. A nice four-way that did feature our friend Ty Colton and Merrick Brave and Knight Wagner. And you had, of course, a tag match between Men of the Year and I think it was Fu Manchu. And honestly, the main event wasn't bad. It wasn't a bad match in that Cabana threw away all his comedy tactics and Hollister seemed to be, you know, on his game. I was sick of seeing those kind of finishes where Shane Hollister reigns supreme because of his flunkies. And need I mention, this show ended via low blow. Kick to the dick. Show over.
So. Always a great way to end a show, Derek. I don't know if you know this.
It's frustrating, and I really hope they just take care of Shane's title reign a little better because he's on his second one now, and it's going same road. It's going down the same road.
And Derek, I understand that there was also an incident between Kevin Harvey, his group, and AEW owner Jim Lynham. So why don't you discuss that for a little bit, because it appears that we're building to something that could be rather interesting.
There was a point in the last show where Kevin Harvey beat up the Moondog Bernard and the Seaman, and then him and his group, We Are Here, started attacking Jim Lynham, who owns AEW. So now there's going to be like a power struggle storyline, and I'm just going to blow my brains out over that, because the last time Harvey was in power, yeah.
I'm just going to throw my computer out the window now.
Do you guys feel that the problem with an angle like this is that it has been done to death by every other wrestling company in the world?
No, it's self-involvement. If you own the company, stay back. You own the company. You don't work for the company.
Are you saying you don't approve of DJ Hyde wrestling on CZW shows? Is that what you're telling me?
Absolutely not. Like, the only thing I would ever, ever recommend for, like, an owner slash commissioner wrestling is, like, JBL down in NXT, because I still like JBL as a wrestler. But beyond that, like, if you're an old fat dude in your 40s, no offense to anybody, stay out of the damn ring. Like, nobody pays to see Kevin Harvey fight anybody. Nobody pays to see Jim Lynham, you know, step between the ropes and throw a clothesline. People pay to see action from, you know, experienced workers, and you're just taking up 10, 15 minutes on people who don't belong in the ring.
I mean, I think that's been an overall problem with AAW too. Like, a lot of the matches have been between, as long as I've followed, there's been matches between authority figures or something like that. And
I mean, how many years, how many decades can you rehash the old 1998 corporation story with it still having some legs to it?
Let's be fair, it's not just AEW. It's a lot of companies that AIW run into this issue. So AIW's done it. Ring of Honor has done it multiple times. WWE is still doing it. So I think this is more a symptom of the general world of wrestling as opposed to just an AEW problem. I mean, I still think it's an issue. And I think that, I mean, obviously, I think it goes without saying Kevin Harvey and Jim Lynham should never wrestle each other. But
like, I like Harvey as a manager, and I apologize for cutting you off, Jerome. I like Harvey as a manager. He's very good with his facial expressions. He's fun to photograph and to film, honestly. And he's really good at just getting involved in his matches. But as soon as he starts fighting and getting involved in the wrestling component of it, that's when I draw the line and say, hey, I don't want to see this, period, end of story.
Now, I would argue that there isn't necessarily millions of dollars per se, but I think there's sort of a blow off that needs to come where Kevin Harvey needs to get killed as a manager, because, you know, he hasn't taken a bump, and I think that's a positive thing. But, you know, I think there is a point where you beat him up and he goes away for a little while and comes back and is a manager, you know, whatever. But, you know, he definitely shouldn't be wrestling. And I think the moment that you sort of build up to is Kevin Harvey getting beaten up by Ryan Boz or someone involved with this feud.
Yes, if Lynham backs Boz and Harvey backs Walker and they have an 8-minute hoss fight blow off in which Boz whips Walker and then Harvey gets banned and We Are Here has to disband, and all right, I'm cool with that because the fans want to see a hoss fight between Boz and Walker. I mean, I do, personally. I don't want to see just two guys who are untrained, who can't take bumps, try to do that.
I think that brings our conversation about Path of Redemption to an end. And I sort of want to talk about the main storylines that are going on in AEW as it pertains. And I would say that there's, you know, obviously everything we discussed with Shane Hollister, we don't really need to rehash that. But I definitely want to talk about Silas Young and Eddie Kingston. And Alex, since Eddie Kingston is from Yonkers, I'm going to let you speak on this feud and your thoughts on it.
Let's go, Jack.
That's a weird connection.
This is why I host, everybody. This is why I host.
Feud started way back when Eddie Kingston came to AAW. He said he wanted to fight the best people. He killed 3 people of no consequence. Later in the show, he attacks Silas Young. And the attacks usually involved Val Malone getting hurt, which, of course, made Silas Young angry, which led to matches. Eddie Kingston put out Val Malone for good, which, you hurt a man's wife. Where else are you going to go from there?
And what have your thoughts been on sort of the match quality and the promos that have been cut by both men?
I think Eddie Kingston's promos have been really good. I think Silas has been really solid. The matches themselves, I haven't gotten a lot of enjoyment out of them. The one at One Twisted Christmas I saw actually really recently. And it was there. Like, it went and it was gone. And I was like, wait, I've been waiting for this. What happened?
Feels like it never really got out of the gate, either match, right?
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, I think I actually preferred the second match to the first one.
Same.
But the second match, it still felt like there was something missing. And if the third match is really outstanding, then I'm sort of willing to give the first two a hall pass. But if whatever machination the third match takes, that match needs to be really, really outstanding.
Yeah, I feel like they sort of screwed the pooch with the first match. from there on, because it just felt like they were keeping something off the table, you know? They wanted to save something for the next match or maybe the blow off. But then you get to the second match and it's the same thing. It feels like they're still keeping something off the table. They're waiting, they're stalling. Like, what are you waiting for? You need to give us something to entice us to your next match, because they never had me from the first match. They had me from all their promos, both Silas and Kingston. Like, that's probably their best promo work I've seen thus far, to be honest with you. But match quality-wise, there's so much to be desired there.
I still feel like there's been, like, an amping up of what's going on, and I think Val Malone played a real big part in that. I think without Val's involvement, I would not be interested in seeing a third match.
What do you think of Jordynne Grace, who's Eddie's girl?
I have not seen Jordynne Grace yet.
Well, she's supposed to be like Eddie's new valet. I guess she's supposed to be like a little mockery of Val Malone. And Eddie takes pride in the fact that not only did he knock Val Malone out of AEW for good, but wrestling for good, at least according to him. So now he's bringing out a valet every month. And this, she's like really junky looking, really, I guess, Berwyn looking, if you want to go that far. And she's kind of green around the edges in that when she gets involved in Eddie's matches, she does it really roughly. But like, I'm not trying to throw mud at her or anything. It seems clear that they're trying to play up the duality of, you know, Silas Young's girl got knocked out, Eddie's girl's going to get knocked out, and then they're just going to come to blows and kill each other pretty much. Do you think similar, Jerry?
I think Jordynne Grace is specifically there to get killed by Silas at some point. That's literally what her job is at this point.
But she's killing everybody else in the meantime, so what's up with that?
She almost pulled poor Jonathan Gresham out of the ring completely when trying to choke him. That was a little scary.
She spiked Lince Dorado on his neck, and like, people were gasping in horror. Like, I'm sure even Eddie Kingston like took a step back after that one.
Well, they used to train together at Chikara, so there is some sort of a connection there.
Like, I mean, there's a certain point where, like, oh man, these guys are pros. It only looks like he landed on his neck. But then when you're sitting in the front row and you see a guy, like, literally fall on top of his head, that shouldn't be happening in any context.
Especially someone who has had a seizure in the ring at one point in the main event of a Chikara show, like, 6 years ago, or so, almost 7 years ago now. So he's got a history of head and neck problems. Taken in an ambulance out of Philadelphia.
Ooh, Lince Dorado?
Yeah, Lince Dorado. Oh, he did a shooting star press, basically landed on his head, and he got taken out of the arena in an ambulance. And they actually canceled the main event of that show.
That's intense.
Yeah.
But if you're on the main card and this is your main feud, as it is between Silas and Eddie Kingston, you can't just throw out some greenhorn. Like, it's going to stand out, and it's really going to diminish the quality of the feud. At least Val Malone, you know, she took her bumps. She looked good out there. She knew her way around the ring, at least.
I also don't feel that Silas killing Jordan will equal out what happened to Val.
You're right. Silas doesn't really... That's not really Silas's character right now, for one, but at the same time, Silas loves Val. We sort of know that they have a relationship, I believe, in real life. Correct me if I'm wrong.
They're married and have a kid, so yes.
Yes, well, I guess. Well, there you go. I don't want to speculate or anything, but it's clear that Eddie and Jordynne Grace are just, you know, like, they don't have that same connection. So you're right, Alex, in that when Silas does eventually kill Jordan, figuratively, it's not going to have that same emotional impact, but... Then again, I'm just going to wait and see where this goes. So,
I would almost say the stronger thing to do would be for him not to kill Jordan.
Interesting. Go on.
For her to, like if he has the chance and she begs him off and then he lets her go. I think it would make Silas look like a better person. It would make the feud look stronger because he almost became Eddie Kingston in a way. By attacking his girl, and obviously that's the last person he would want to be. I think it's a sort of subtlety that I don't trust wrestling with, but I think having Jordynne Grace letting her go would make Silas Young look a lot better and would do a lot more for the feud.
I can see that. I think that makes that's a very fair argument, I think.
So what other angles do we have? I know we've discussed Silas and Kingston, and apologize if I'm stepping on your toes here, but I believe there are a couple more, you know, really hot angles right now that we should discuss. And one of them I want to discuss was Elgin and Paige's rise through the tag team ranks, because
the best part of AEW is Michael Elgin and Ethan Page. AEW's One Twisted Christmas. Ethan Page was without a partner for a second consecutive month, so AEW decided to just put these together and let hijinks ensue. Elgin and Page won the AEW tag team titles. They are now the men of the year, and Elgin and Page have a big time connection, obviously, sort of coming from the same area, traveling together as they did for a number of years. And Elgin and Page have had some fantastic matches so far. The match that they won the belts in was very good. I would argue UHA Nation and Ricochet was one of the best matches I've seen on the indies so far. Obviously, you know, the Kung Fu match was a mixed bag. But Elgin and Page together, I think, is a great thing, because I think they sort of bring out the best in each other, both in the ring and in their promos. I think Elgin has sort of gotten to show a different facet of his personality, maybe being a little bit more humorous, not being so super serious. And, you know, I think because Elgin is such a big star within the context of AEW, former heavyweight champion, heritage champion, tag team champion, you know, Ethan Page sort of gets to hang out in the main event now and sort of get to show what he can do. And, you know, I don't see how this tag team doesn't eventually break off into a feud and Ethan Page becomes a star within AEW. And Alex, any thoughts on that?
Just as an aside before I get into that, I think they should team up with Kevin Steen as a super group called Prolapsed Anus. With all due respect to Josh Alexander.
Why Prolapsed Anus? I have to know.
You didn't see the promo?
I don't remember the promo. I mean, they're always so good, I can't pick out any single line that stands out, you know?
Basically, they talked about how they heard that Josh Alexander had a prolapsed anus.
Anal bleeding, huh?
Yeah. And that's why Paige was going looking for tag team people. And Steen popped out at one point saying that he looked up prolapsed anuses. And
That's right. That's right. You know, all those Canadians just get along so well.
The Canadian supergroup Prolapsed Anus. I think this has to happen.
It does.
I smell a King of Trios team.
Where does Alexander fit in all this? I mean, him and Paige were running with the Mafia so well. They were honestly going from first to, like, from worst to first, so to speak. Although, first match on the cards, not, I don't know. But you know what I mean. They were going from first match on the show to last match until Alexander got hurt. And now it seems like Paige, without Alexander, his star is rising more than it was with him. And I hate to say that, because Josh Alexander himself is a fantastic wrestler.
Josh Alexander is fitting in really well in Calgary, Alberta, Canada right now, if you catch my drift.
Oh, is he up there now?
Yes.
Interesting. Well, that's good for him.
I think if he were to come back, like, it could go either way. Like, if you want him as a face, he's now out of Monster Mafia because now Paige has Elgin, and then you have Alexander wrestling the both of them, and those are matches that are proven to deliver.
Yes.
Or if you want him to come back heel, he helps attack Elgin, they oust him out, now Elgin's wrestling the both of them, also matches that are proven to deliver.
That's true. I mean, as much as I want to see, you know, AIW level of singles runs from both Paige and Alexander, Monster Mafia was something special in that fans connected with them instantly. They saw that these guys had size, they had presence, they could talk, they could work. And that was all from, you know, just their first match against, I believe, Zero Gravity. They got a really loud "please come back" chant, and that in itself is a relative rarity in AAW and on the indies. So I wanted to see just how far those two could have gone, but, you know, I'm also thinking that they might have had a ceiling since Paige can talk and Alexander sort of always followed his lead on those promos. And now with Men of the Year, Paige is just talking all the time and he's making that connection with everybody, which is, you know, an ideal thing.
I think Monster Mafia is really good, too, in the that it separates what they're doing with what AIW is doing with them. So we get to see both sides of them.
This is true. And to put them, to plug them, hi, Ethan Page and Josh Alexander, on smartmarkvideo.com, they currently have a 75-minute shoot video, I believe, and, you know, it's got like 7 or 8 matches on there, so Best of Monster Mafia, check it out. There's a plug.
Definitely check it out. If there's anyone you want to call 2013's like breakout stars, it's them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a match on there between the Mafia and, who was it? Team Ambition, Davey Richards and Kyle O'Reilly. That was one of AEW's best matches ever. So, I mean, that alone's worth it for the price of admission. And I'm going to stop plugging now. So, there.
But yes, do you guys think that Ethan Page will be a singles champion by the end of the year like I do?
No.
No.
Why do you say that? Border issues still, or?
He's too good for a Heritage title run, and he's not ready yet for an AAW title run. They see the world in him, and it's obvious. Like, anyone who can connect with fans basically at the snap of a finger overnight, just draw that comedy out of them, those laughs, that seriousness, that hatred, he can really do it all. Plus, he's a hell of a worker. So I think that like early 2015 is really going to be his time to break out. And I honestly think that Ring of Honor is going to sign him by the year's end. So he recently was at their tryout, and it seemed like everyone really liked him there. And I wish him the best of luck. But as far as AEW is concerned, next year is the year of Paige.
Alex, do you agree with Derek, or do you sort of have a different reason for it?
I think, especially with what you have with Paige, I think he won't be, like, I don't think he'll sniff the title at all, although he'll have great matches. And part of that is because I think they're not done with what they're doing with Shane Hollister.
Right.
And for them to get it to Paige, I cannot see him getting it off of Hollister. I cannot at all.
Fair enough.
So you would need a transitional champion then.
And that wouldn't even be a good place to bring in Paige. To just give it to someone so they could give it to Paige. Like, that doesn't feel right for me. Like, I almost feel like he should be doing it with someone who is equally as a good guy as he is a bad guy.
How about Elgin on the 29th, since that match is already signed?
I can see it. I just wouldn't want it to end up juggling between Hollister, Elgin, and then Paige.
You're right. And
it feels like a lot of the same.
It should be noted that during the tag match at Path of Redemption between Fu Manchu and Men of the Year, that there was some tension teased between Paige and Elgin, where I believe Paige super kicked Elgin in the face, and they had a near fall after that. So not only is it too early for them to be teasing dissension, but it seems like they definitely want to do like a singles title run between Paige, Elgin, possibly Alexander, and just their main event's going to get bigger, I think, over the next couple months, size-wise.
And from all indications, it looks like that Elgin and Paige will be getting into some sort of involvement with Irish Airborne. And those are probably going to be some great matches for Irish Airborne. Because let's face it, they're one of the few tag teams on the independent scene that have been together as long as they have. And finding them teams sometimes has been extremely difficult. So I'm hopeful that a program with Paige and Elgin really make Airborne strong again in AEW. I think they've done some of their best work in this company. And I think a feud with Elgin and Paige will really bring them back into the scene in the main event.
Personally speaking, I think this match needs to turn Men of the Year full-fledged face. They've been doing that tweener sort of thing. I think it's very important for this match to turn Men of the Year full-fledged face, because Airborne plays such a great heel role, and I believe that the Berwyn crowd really wants to finally fully embrace Men of the Year as their own. And I think if you play up that dynamic of full heel versus full face instead of heel versus, you know, in-betweener, I think that's really going to make a big difference down the road.
We talked about the tag team champions. We've talked about Silas Young and Eddie Kingston. Talked about the heavyweight champion. We're not saving the worst for last. We're saving someone who is probably going to be the breakout star in 2014. He is the AEW Heritage Champion, Matt Cage. This is a man who debuted on the charity show back in August, and he was the Heritage Champion by November. Has gone over ACH twice. and he was the first promo on the new TV show. I have to imagine that AEW is going to push the hell out of Matt Cage, and that he is going to be, if not their biggest star, one of their biggest stars by the end of the year, their top heel in 2015, depending where Hollister is. I mean, guys, I just think Matt Cage is one of those guys that in 2014, everybody's going to sort of know who he is.
I could see that. I'm not sure if 2014 is going to be his breakout year. I mean, you mentioned that he went from, what, August to November, like starting on the show, debut, and then he won the title. I'm not sure if this is his year yet, because when I see him, the way he carries himself, I'm not sure if I see that presence, that full confidence in what he has to offer. And he does have a lot to offer in the ring. He's very crisp. On his promo, he's very sincere and genuine with what he does. But I want to see him like carry himself a little more confidently, maybe slow down when he's talking a little bit, just to get that emphasis across more and just play up more of his character more. Like, he's got this great character of the money, Matt Cage. How about have a talk show called Money Talks or something, where you put over your massive ego as the heel champion, something like that. I just need to see a little bit more.
Let's put him. I think that's a great segment for the TV show. In fact, Money Talks.
Like, have a little exclusive segments like that, like little promos or like little Money Talk segments, just get introducing these wrestlers, like Alex mentioned.
Alex, your thoughts on Matt Cage?
I think we're getting closer, and I think he has all the potential right now, but I haven't seen that moment yet. And maybe it's something I haven't seen yet, the second match with ACH or maybe with Miller, but I think he needs something where, like, everybody wakes up and everybody sees it all at the same time, like something really impactful.
What would you say, like, compare someone like an Elgin, who everyone connects with, to what separates them, and why doesn't Cage have that, you know, that grab all thing that Elgin or a Page would have?
Well, Elgin can hold someone over his head for a minute.
Yeah, so he has a gimmick. He has a catch.
Yeah. And I think the money is a good gimmick, but not completely there yet.
I think he's got a good character, and he's got a good presence, and he cuts a really good promo. I think it's the in-ring work is very good, but I don't think it's at the level. Like, when you watch a Matt Cage match as opposed to a Michael Elgin match, there's just something different about the way that these guys are executing their moves and sort of the fluidity and the confidence. I think that's the biggest difference between Cage and Elgin. If you were to ask me who can talk better, it's Matt Cage by a long mile. But Michael Elgin, his ability to go in the ring and just have a great match with anyone on that roster and with anyone in any roster. I mean, this is a guy Elgin can, if he's on an independent wrestling show, the odds are fairly good he's going to have the best match on it.
Agreed.
So that's the difference, I think, is that Matt Cage isn't that guy yet. He's very good. I can't think of a Matt Cage match that has been bad, but he's in that mid-card, upper mid-card level. He's not the main event yet.
One thing I've noticed from Matt Cage's matches, each and every single one of them, he works stiff. And I'm not sure if that's speaking more to his style or, you know, maybe he just doesn't realize what he's doing. But if you watch some of those, you know, uppercuts and those palm strikes during the ACH series, those were concussive blows. And I'm not just saying that like as someone, oh, you know, they're faking it for, you know, for the viewers at home, but some of those shots were like legit knock you on your ass, really smack him across the temple kind of stuff. And I'm not sure if he needs to tone it down a little bit, if he needs to tighten it up a little bit, if he needs to protect his opponents a little bit more or himself a little bit more, but that's just what I've been noticing.
And I think it also, you know, Matt Cage has been working in sort of the doldrums of the central and southern Illinois area in Iowa. You know, AEW is the biggest company that Matt Cage has ever wrestled for. And that, you know, that's no disrespect in particular to Dreamwave Wrestling. But, you know, when you get to this level, it's a little bit different because you're no longer that big fish in a small pond. You sort of got to swim with the big guys. And I think it is very challenging. The one thing I will say is that for Matt Cage, I think the promos, regardless, I think make a huge difference for him. that ability to have a character and to talk, I think, compensates for, and I don't even want to say their deficiencies, because it's not like Matt Cage is going in there and shitting the bed. Let's not go that far. But it's definitely not, he's not at Michael Elgin's level yet. And to be fair, there are a lot of people that really aren't at Michael Elgin's level yet.
Right.
Yeah, it's not fair to compare the two.
Not right now.
If you just look at the way Elgin, or, you know, someone who's more experienced, even like a Cabana, even if I have to go there, no offense, Colt. If, just look at the way they lay out a match, how every move flows into the next move. The finish makes sense. There's psychology there. Matt Cage, to me, looks a little bit chaotic, a little rough around the edges. And once he, like, tightens that up and learns to slow down a little bit, I think he's very, very fast on his feet. And he just needs to slow it down a little bit, in my opinion. He'll have it.
Alex, do you agree?
I think until he's completely there, just throw in those mannerisms. Like, make it rain. Make fun of people. Like,
so you want to see more character out of him, even.
Like, I think for a while, like, it'll help slow down the match. And at the same time, like, just showing a bunch of character and getting people into you can work a lot more than a lot of the moves that you can do. And while he's getting there in the ring, he can just get people into him by being the biggest, like, asshole he could possibly be.
I agree with Alex in that, like, thinking that if you put Matt Cage in this gigantic asshole heel role, you know, he's going to get more and more over. And there was a show a couple months ago, I want to say, was it November, where he was just, like, spitting on the fans, spitting water at them, knocking a fan's hat off, slapping a fan. Like, he was healing it up big time, crossing several lines, in my opinion. But, like, fans wanted to, like, legit kill him. I heard a guy come up to me, he's like, I was about to hop the rail and beat the hell out of that guy, like, for real. I'm like, really? That's the good stuff. If you're getting that sincere a reaction out of people, you're doing a good job. So he's definitely got everything it takes. Just polish it up a little bit.
Absolutely. Any other big angles that you two would like to cover? Derek, anything that you feel is important and worth mentioning?
Not at this time, although we do have, you know, back-to-back shows coming up here in about 2 weeks now. So I think we should really talk about those, especially Epic, which is the 10th year anniversary.
So AEW 10 years ago started, and it's like a different company at this point. Some of the matches have already been announced for March 21st and the 29th. On March the 21st, AEW will, of course, be returning to the Berwyn Eagles Club. $20 for front row stage, and $15 for second row, $15 for general admission. And if you have an opportunity, then you should definitely come out.
Front row sold out, I should mention.
For sure. And there are going to be a number of surprises. Perhaps some guests from the past are going to be on this show, as they will be celebrating 10 years of being open for business. And three matches have been announced up to this point. I mentioned the Irish Airborne Men of the Year issue earlier, and they will indeed be wrestling for the AEW tag team titles. And I would presume that that is either going to be the semi-main event or the main event of the show. Merrick Brave and Knight Wagner have sort of been sniping at each other in some multi-man matches, and they will be having their first one-on-one match. The other match announced, it will be the AEW wrestling debut of Silesia Sparks, as she will be wrestling Heidi Loveless. Heidi Loveless has gotten herself over with the AEW crowd. It's not, despite the fact, and I feel like I say this 100 times, but despite the fact that AEW runs in the same venue as Shimmer, women's wrestling has always had trouble getting over in AEW. But Heidi Loveless has done a very good job, I think, of getting herself over with that crowd. And Loveless will be wrestling Silesia Sparks and some of the other people that have been signed. Alex Shelley is the biggest name, I would say, and his return is a very big deal, as he will be doing a number of independence dates in March and April. Cole Cabana, Matt Cage, Shane Hollister, Zero Gravity, Silas Young, Kyle O'Reilly, and Kung Fu Manchu, plus Eddie Kingston. So
Ty Colton.
How could I forget Ty Colton?
So
there's only three matches announced at this point, but anything really stand out to you, Alex?
I would assume that Elgin and the Irish Airborne still kind of have an issue, right? Dating back to the whole Silas Young thing?
I would assume that's going to be mentioned. If they mention Silas and Irish Airborne's issue, I would like to hope and think that they would mention it here as well.
3-month rule.
I mean, they mentioned the Silas Young Irish Airborne thing, and that thing was over a year, so...
Well, they're pretty good at drumming up history. I just wish they would put together more, like, historic promo videos before, like, those big matches to show us context, you know what I mean?
Definitely. I think that's a problem with, again, every independent wrestling company.
And that's what would set AEW aside from the others if they actually took the time to do that. Just throw Ethan Page $50. He'll do it on his own, you know? Does it already. That's why he's going to the top, because he cares.
So, Derek, should we assume that Merrick Brave is beating Knight Wagner mostly because he has a Heritage title match the next week? Because that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, he's got to look strong going into that match. And I have to say, I'm actually looking forward to this match because Merrick Brave's comeback kind of started off slow, but then it really picked up pace. And his work in the ring has been very solid. And Knight Wagner just adds to his character and his look month to month, piecing it together, always improving. So no matter which way that match goes, I'm more excited for what happens between the bells instead of after it, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty funny to me that Seth Rollins really gets a push on TV and all of a sudden Merrick Brave comes back. It's funny how that works.
And it's funny how Rollins is always retweeting Brave's tweets about, buy my shirt, but it's not cheap. You know, they're legit friends, so, you know, it's not like he's saying, please promote me, bro. They're buddies.
Gotta build up to selling that feud DVD.
Gotta build up to Christian Rose coming back and beating up Merrick Brave in Pontiac, but shh.
Absolutely.
I miss him so much.
Who doesn't see that coming? I mean,
I miss him so much. He's so
good. Don't have to say shush.
Oh, so, man. Alex, there's women wrestling. Why don't you talk about that?
You're the woman.
Sexism.
Woo! Wrestling is misogyny.
I see what I'm here for. Okay, I think Heidi Lovelace, part of the reason why she's been able to connect is because she's been able to mix it up with the guys. I think that's part of the reason. Mischief has a connection. And I don't really trust an AAW crowd with a women's match. But I think between Heidi Lovelace and Sleazia, who's very good at getting people into what she's doing, like, I think this will be solid.
Have you actually... I've never watched a Silesia Sparks match. No, that's not true. I've seen her wrestle once.
Were you there for the...
I saw the DVD. That's the one Silesia Sparks match that I've ever seen.
I did see that match. That match was pretty great. It was a short match, but it was a really good match. Silesia's powerful.
She looks powerful, that's for sure.
And... she's had some time in Japan now. That's always usually led to a nice increase in talents. So,
am I the only one who finds it odd or out of place that there's a women's match on this card in like the last 5 or 6 months, barring the Shimmer show, of course, there really hasn't been a women's match?
I think the reason that is Mischief's pregnancy was part of the reason. And every time the last 2 months for sure, AEW ran the same night as Shine, so Heidi Lovelace works for Shine, so that's why I think it's been tough.
I mean, is Lovelace and Mischief like the only two they can really grab? I mean, if you ever go to the Shimmer weekend shows, and I know it's a product of those fans being in the building, but when they bring in like Soraya Knight, she is so over. Like, she just is so good at what she does. Like, I would kill to have her there for a show, although you can't really fly her over, but like anybody. Bring in Candice LeRae. I don't know. I'd pay for her.
I don't foresee AEW. I mean, they really keep the fly-ins to a minimum, and especially with the women's wrestlers, I think that would be very, very difficult.
Yeah, and let's just push aside fly-ins for a moment. What was Heather Patera doing that night?
Yeah.
I don't know, guys. I'm trying to bring you answers, but there are some questions that I can't answer everything, all right?
I would take a Veda Scott match at this point. Just give me somebody new.
Derek. Let's stop. Let's just stop and let's take a breath. Let's think about what we just said.
Crazy talk.
I know. I mean, I want to pay to watch people who know how to hit the ropes, but gee, she's improved. She has. I mean, she's not at the level like of a Sarah Del Rey, but how many people are training all the divas of tomorrow in WWE? Not too many. So.
Not that many at all. So AEW is also running a show on March the 29th. It is their debut at Freaksters Roadhouse in Pontiac, Illinois. And three big matches have been announced for that show. Shane Hollister will be defending the AEW title against Michael Elgin in a rematch 9 months in the making. Matt Cage and Merrick Brave will be wrestling for the Heritage title. I believe these two guys have wrestled each other a bunch in other places. So this should be very good. Christian Rose is going to interfere. All Ego, Ethan Page will be wrestling Lewis Linden in, I guess, the AIW...
Showcase.
The AIW Showcase. These two have been teaming together in AIW, and they're going to explode in AEW. So,
two guns!
The Cleveland Megapowers explode.
Yep. And in addition, in addition to that, Rhino will be making his AEW return.
Oh, man, Rhino. Oh, boy.
I think it's a smart move. If you're going to run a new venue and maybe you're running, you know, someplace that is unfamiliar to the fans, I think it's a good idea to sort of have a name. And at least Rhino is someone who can still wrestle. So,
oh, absolutely. I don't hate Rhino. I'm just really nonplussed by the announcement. But he is going to pop ticket sales more likely, so.
And Zero Gravity, Kyle O'Reilly, ACH, Marion Fontaine, Knight Wagner, Mike Horning with Coach Burns. I do not know who that is. And if I don't know who an indie wrestler is, I don't even know what to say. I guess I'm going to find out on March 29th who this person is.
Coach Burns, isn't that the character Keegan-Michael Key played on Mad TV with the mustache and the bald head?
Coach. Wow, that is the first ever Mad TV reference on any Pro Wrestling Ponderings podcast ever. So that's history, Derek. You've made history.
You ever had Will Sasso on here doing a Stone Cold or Bret Hart making fun of him?
So I would say that the Freaksters Roadhouse card, obviously, given that they're running this new venue, you know, bringing Elgin and Hollister is a big deal. Cage and Brave as well. So I assume that this is going to sort of fill itself out over the next couple weeks. Derek, your thoughts on getting to see Hollister and Elgin in a rematch?
It's been too long in the making, in my opinion. I think they were saving Elgin's rematch because he's going to take the title back off him to set up something against Paige and or Alexander. But if you think about it, like, I think it's a missed opportunity because during Shane's first title run, when he had these beefs with Cabana, when he had these beefs with Elgin, and it was fresh in our minds, that's when you pull the trigger on the match. Like, now you sort of have to go back in time all the way back to last year to drum up any sort of history between Elgin and Hollister, and I think that's really going to kill the heat of the match. The match quality itself would be fantastic given, you know, who's in it, but the backstory, I think, is going to suffer.
Yeah, because Elgin very much has moved on to different things. I mean, he's sort of been more involved with the tag team titles at this point and with Ethan Page as opposed to the heavyweight title, and Shane Hollister has sort of gone in a number of different directions. You know, having the back-to-back matches with Eric Cannon, Kevin Steen, Jimmy Jacobs, Colt Cabana. So he's sort of, they've both gone in different directions. But, you know, I think if they're going to do this rematch all these months later, I think it's a good idea to do it here in this new venue because I think you're guaranteed a good match. And I think that's why they're doing it.
Yeah, am I wrong for thinking that the Freaksters Roadhouse show actually looks a little more solid than the anniversary show, at least thus far?
My hunch is that it is going to be the better of the two shows in the ring. I think the 10th anniversary show is sort of more about celebrating the anniversary of the company and sort of being more of a party than a wrestling show.
Yeah, you'll probably have, like, every so often I'll run video packages, AAW memory, AAW memory, something like that. And that's going to be really cool for at least the Berwyn crowd to take in.
Alex, your thoughts on any of the matches announced for Pontiac?
Am I the only one who thinks it'll be a missed opportunity if Ethan Page doesn't play valet for Michael Elgin and doesn't interact with Scarlett during that match?
He played valet at Path of Redemption. He did cheerleading on the sidelines. It was awesome. Hilarious.
No, I just want, like, him and Scarlett interacting and them, like, messing with each other. I think that would be the best thing they could possibly do for this.
That would, honestly, I would buy the DVD instantly if that were a reality. I mean, I'm going to be there, but I'd also buy the show too for that. What are your thoughts on that, Jerry?
I think this, I think Elgin and, I mean, all these matches sound very good. I think Merrick Brave and Matt Cage, We'll have to see who interferes or not. But I think Ethan Page and Lewis Linden's going to be very good. I think it's going to be very solid all the way around. And, you know, I just see Lewis Linden as a very underrated guy. And AIW and AEW both seem determined to push him, and I think that's a very good thing for him. You know, he's the intense champion in AIW. He's been tag team champion in AEW and has gotten a number of bigger singles matches recently. So, you know, I'm very hopeful that Lewis Linden can deliver here. And, you know, I think it's a big match for Ethan Page as well. You know, he hasn't had a lot of singles matches in AAW. So this is sort of a big opportunity for him.
This is his first.
All right. So, you know, this is a big opportunity for him. You know, he's obviously wrestled singles and held titles in other places. But, you know, in this company, this is sort of a fresh opportunity for him. And I think it's a big one.
That's true. I think, man, I can't get over Alex's idea of Paige playing cheerleader in ballet. That's just such a great idea. And yeah, I think
cat fight with Scarlett. I'm telling you, money.
It's, I mean, just that guy is like so entertaining with whatever he does, and Scarlett's so entertaining with whatever she does, and that's just like a chemistry bomb waiting to happen right there, I feel.
If Silesia and Scarlett were to have a cat fight.
Ooh. I don't know. Wasn't Silesia in the Hoopla Brigade?
They were both in the
Hoopla. Hoopla powers explode.
Yes.
Hoopla powers.
All right. So I think that is all the topics that we are going to be covering tonight. I'm not exactly sure what we're going to do the next show because it is a busy month of podcasting for Pro Wrestling Ponderings. We've got a number of WrestleMania things coming up. AEW is going to be running 3 shows in 4 weeks. They're running on March 21st, the 10th anniversary show, the 29th in Pontiac, and then they're back for Awesome Weekend on April the 11th. So it is a busy, busy month for AEW and for the wrestling scene here in Chicago in general, with WWE running this past week as well as Ring of Honor. Ugh, just so much wrestling to be watched. But for right now,
tickets, Jerry? Your Scheimer tickets?
I will be getting my Scheimer tickets very soon.
Okay, good. I'm still on the fence about whether or not to go.
Don't go to the Shimmer after party. Go. You can go to the shows.
Oh, boy.
Try to isolate yourself. Before we get out of here, it is a tradition here on PWP where people plug what they do for the website. So, Alex, I'm going to turn this over to you. Plug what you do for Pro Wrestling Ponderings. Plug your Twitter. And you can plug what you do for Free Pro Wrestling as well.
Okay. For PW Ponderings, I am going to be reviewing AEW's show, and I'm going to be reviewing the DVDs. Check that out. I'm on Twitter at Failraiser. Come talk to me about nothing important. I do reviews on Free Wrestling. We've basically tell you which matches you should be watching that are legally on the internet. That's about all I have to say. Watch anything I post on my Twitter.
Derek, why don't you talk? I know you love to talk on the Twitters.
Oh, man. Well, my Twitter handle is @DWalker87. And I do these lengthy Twitter rants about visions I have and, you know, cool things. Like, for example, say Alex has that great idea about Ethan Page being Elgin's valet for the night, I would write a 20-tweet string about how great an idea that is and why it's a great idea. So in other words, I'm telling you not to follow me on there because I'll piss you off. But for pwponderings.com, I am a weekly columnist for AAW, which is called, again, Squared Circular Logic. I just pulled that out of my butt as I free wrote that article. And I take pictures sometimes and throw them into my live reviews. And generally speaking, I annoy those who read or listen to me because I'm so strongly opinionated, right?
Well, it's
That's
wrestling.
That's why you love me. That's why you love me.
Well, Derek, you'll be the heel of the group. You're the heel. Alex is the baby face. I'm the tweener. That's how this
works. What does that make Justin Houston then? Mega heel?
Justin is the mega heel of Pro Wrestling Ponderies. He is the Triple H.
He's the Vince McMahon, the Mr. Houston.
No. He's the Triple H. Don't kid yourself.
Oh, well, you still got the ability to fire him, don't you?
I mean, I'm the Vince McMahon of the site, but I'm more the ambivalent 1980s Vince McMahon, not the authority corporate Vince McMahon of the late 90s.
Well, as long as you got your pompadour either way, I think you'll
be surprised. That's, you know, I always keep it handy, and I, you know, I always have a nice blue or red jacket on me, so it's, it works out.
Salmon or bust?
What on the news?
Absolutely. I don't, when I did commentary, I didn't call moves. I just said, what a maneuver. That's all I did.
Oh, look at Shawn Michaels. Ah, let him go.
All right. For Alex and for Derek, my name is Jerome Cusan. You've been listening to the first ever AEW podcast. This could very well be the last. We do not have a name yet for the show. So what I would like to do is, if you have any suggestions, please send them to at Jerome PWP Editor, where you can find me, as well as at PW Ponderings. Give us a follow at PW Ponderings. We tweet out live results. Most of the time, it's every weekend. And that's where I tweet out, in particular, AAW, whenever I go to a show, whenever I go to Ring of Honor, and whenever we get a chance to. And it's a great place to read results, get all the links to the articles. We have a number of new writers, including Alex and Derek, and some of the other great people as well. Jonathan and Ari Berenstein is back with his little columns of honor. Barry has been doing some work for us. Chris GST is always posting new reviews in the weekly newscast. Kevin Ford has Fan to Fan, where he talks to just a fan or even a wrestler about being a professional wrestling fan. Based on this podcast, you guys will not make the cut of Fan to Fan. I'm sorry to tell you that.
His loss.
Yeah, it's his loss.
We don't need him anyway.
You guys are really low on the totem pole right now. If this were the Stonecutters, you guys would be like in the 900s.
Man, ever since I dropped that reference on Twitter, you've been picking it up, man.
That's what I do. That's, to quote Mark Henry, that's what I do.
I'll put you in the Hall of Fame for that.
Oh, boy. So, click on the high spots and the Amazon links to support what we do here at Pro Wrestling Ponderings. Also, make sure to leave those 4 or 5-star reviews on Stitcher and iTunes. And after this podcast, I know you're going to want to run to iTunes and leave that 4 or 5-star review.
So what if Alex, Dave Meltzer gives us -5 stars?
I mean, Dave Meltzer doesn't have any credibility. Just remember, guys, he got the CM Punk story wrong. Totally wrong. No, he didn't. All right. So for Derek, for Alex, I'm Jerome. Thanks for listening. We may talk to you again next month. We may not.